I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you been doing?
It's cold.
It is cold.
It is so fucking cold. I'm so tired of being cold.
I'm so sorry,
and it's
dear.
I'm January. Sorry. I have so much time to be cold ahead of me. I just want warmth and sunshine and vitamin D. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry that in a previous episode, I failed to tell the whole story of Edge Innovations, the animatronic company that brought us Darwin the Dolphin and many similar undersea effects.
To fail? What did you fail at? What did you leave out?
Well, not all of their animatronics are used in media stuff. They are building or trying to build a replacement for dolphins in captivity. People love to see dolphins, swim with dolphins, engage with dolphins.
So they're trying to make me like fake Sea World.
Essentially, yes. What if instead of swimming with the dolphins, you swam with the Darwins?
Absolutely. Fuck yes. Let's go.
And so they are providing the technology behind something called Dolphin Spirit. You can go to edgedolphinspirit.com right now to learn more. And the idea is by having animatronic dolphins of an advanced enough nature, there will no longer be demand for dolphins in captivity. We can do away with this exploitative and cruel sort of treatment of these amazing cetacean cousins.
Can I invest? Can I buy some shares that then, like, once this launches, gets me a dolphin experience?
Rescues and rehabilitation will always, of course, be necessary. I mean, you can make arguments for breeding programs for the endangered and threatened, but this idea is intriguing.
Like, every Disney hotel could have its dolphin you could swim with.
There will be special dolphin hours in the pool.
Yes!
Yes!
Yes! I want to go play volleyball with a dolphin.
Yes! More of a water polo, but sure.
Whatever! Sounds great. I'm thinking like in-pool volleyball, okay?
Yeah.
Come on. This better happen in my lifetime.
So there you go. That is something that the technology that brought you Darwin yesterday is bringing you today. The Dolphin Spirit program.
I like it.
But that's not exactly what we're here to talk about.
No, we're here to talk about whales.
Whales! That's right. Episode 16 of SeaQuest DSV Whale Song. This is written by Patrick Hasberg in his first writer's credit for SeaQuest, that is. He started his career as story editor of The Greatest American Hero.
I don't know what that is.
That's the like 70s original superhero show with the really famous theme song. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air.
That came from a theme song only?
Yes,
that like song just didn't exist? I didn't know it was written for a show.
That's a TV theme song.
I didn't know that.
From there, he co-created the shows Hardcastle and McCormick and 21 Jump Street. I wonder if there will be any 21 Jump Street connections from here to the end of the program.
The answer is yes.
Because Patrick Hasberg will continue to write episodes and has been an executive producer on SeaQuest since Better Than Martians, and continues as an executive producer through the end of the show.
He's got friends.
One of the most stable elements from here to the end of the run is Patrick Hasberg.
It's like him and Lucas.
And it is directed by Brian Spicer, returning from Treasures of the Mind and Bad Water.
He's so spicy.
This is his first time doing a non-David Kemper script.
Yeah. Stepping out.
Turns out there's other people spices writing on this show.
Not just the Kemper spice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's not really funny. That's not going anywhere.
Instead, the Spicer Kemp. I tried. You're right, though. You're right. You're right.
It's, just give up on that one.
So this episode
begins. Not my best work.
With some B-roll of whales breaching majestically in the sea.
I wrote, whales! Exclamation points! Majestic footage of whales!
And then...
For like a really long time. It's a lot of footage of whales.
Then there is a rowboat man dressed up like a modern-day lighthouse keeper.
Yes.
With his knit hat and his semi-synthetic jacket.
I want to be a lighthouse keeper.
I know.
Maybe that should be my new career path.
I know you do.
Maybe that's what I need to start looking for. You want to move?
Sure.
To a lighthouse?
Sure. I'll take a rowboat to work. But his rowboat eventually gets to the shore, mm-hmm. and he finds a whale skeleton, and he walks alongside it, and he sheds a single manly tear.
The most thoroughly picked over
yes.
whale skeleton that is quite bright white, covered in trash
yes.
of plastic and netting,
yes.
somehow, while also being picked completely clean of anything whale.
Mm-hmm. Well, the trash came later.
No, I feel like they're implying the trash is the reason the whale died.
Sure,
it was caught in
sure.
a net. There was like plastic stuck to it,
mm-hmm.
but like it wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, this is very similar to a recent Spellbinder episode I watched where
yeah?
The whitest bleach skeletons that were perfectly set up
mm-hmm.
appeared.
In the ruins of the castle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that ain't what they look like. Nature. It's a little too perfect.
Sure. So are you suspicious of this whale?
I'm just saying they should have, like, dirtied it up a bit.
Do you think this is a product of trickery somehow?
Should have left some muscle on it. Some whale muscle.
There's enough muscles. We don't need to worry about the mussels or the clams or the barnacles.
No?
No.
No, why not?
Just leave them where they're at.
What about the lobsters?
What about the lobsters? Where are we going? What's happening?
Well, you're talking about all of them, and that made me think of Alice in Wonderland and how they're, like, gonna eat all the...
I'm not here to talk about cabbages and kings.
Yeah,
I'm here to talk about Sequest
that.
DSV
but then
episode
they also,
16
like,
whale
there's
song.
There's the lobster quadrille, and, like, that's the whole thing, and... It makes sense in my brain.
The lion and the unicorn fighting for the crown.
So there is a boat
mm-hmm.
and dramatic music now.
And more B-roll, but this time of whaling. Not whales, whaling.
Yes.
Hunting of the whales.
And there's a sub in the water, not the Sequest, a different sub,
mm-hmm.
a very traditional sub, spying on this boat,
mm-hmm.
the Scandinavian whaler.
And that is the first spoken words in this episode, 2.25 minutes in.
Yeah.
We get people calling out coordinates, keeping an eye on this whaling ship,
yes.
illegally whaling.
To coordinates that are in the Irish Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have evidence that this whaler had a humpback in its nets.
Mm-hmm.
And we gotta go tell Max. We gotta tell him about this.
Yes.
It's like...
And so the crew doing the spotting go to the captain's quarters where they find... Rowboat Man, this is Maximilian Scully.
Yes.
Played by Jonathan Banks, best known as Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad.
I, like, don't remember him in Breaking Bad.
We only watched the first two seasons. We got little, if I don't think we got any of Mike Ehrmantraut.
Okay, I was going to say, did we get to him? I don't think we got to him.
He was a huge breakout character in the later seasons.
Okay, yeah, we didn't get there.
You would know him as the Canterbury XO who snaps in the opening scene of the first episode of The Expanse.
Oh! 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 How did I forget? What?
He also voiced Varian's dad in the Tangled cartoon. Yeah.
That's also good.
He got frozen in the crystals or whatever. That's been a long time.
Y'all, if you ain't watching The Expanse and if you didn't go watch the Tangled cartoon, get to it. Perfect television right there. Both ways. Very different. Very great.
But Breaking Bad, eh, I can take it or leave it.
It was fine. Not enough to watch it all. What?
I
like what I like.
Yes. Yes. We need more of that in the world.
We do.
Yes.
You don't need to watch it because other people are watching it.
I always meant to get back to it. I really liked it. It was funny.
I mean, yeah, it was good. It was fine. But, like, never the, like, I must know.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of like, oh, okay.
So the person who was, you know, eyes in the periscope, who was bringing this message, uh-huh, is Wiggins. Crewmate Wiggins is played by Peter DeLuise, son of the legendary Dom DeLuise.
He wasn't the one on the periscope.
He was the one on the map?
He was on the map.
Okay, well, I got confused. Which one is on the periscope and which one is on the map? But Peter DeLuise is currently a TV director and a TV movie producer.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time of this episode was best known as Doug from 21 Jump Street. Huh, interesting.
He's going to be known as something else in a few months.
More to come from Peter DeLuise.
The other dude
who was on the
periscope.
Jerry Webster, played by Jerry Corbett.
Oh,
how convenient.
That's very nice.
He would go on to be the mentor figure, Raleigh Jordan, in the in another TV original superhero show, Nightman.
I don't know.
No one watched Nightman.
No, then I should watch it, apparently. It's on trend with me.
Jerry Corbett went on to die in 3 Roland Emmerich movies.
Oh.
He died in Stargate, Independence Day, and Godzilla.
I have seen all of those. I was really into Stargate back in the day.
Yeah. The film Stargate.
I liked the film, and okay, I watched the show.
Naturally.
The first show. There's been many shows since. I haven't seen any of those.
You didn't follow along to Stargate Atlantis?
No. No.
Stargate Origins?
No. I just watched
Stargate Universe.
The original Stargate.
Just SG-1.
Yes.
Not SG-2.
No, SG-1. Just okay. SG-1.
They should make an SG-2.
They should just keep doing it that
That's
way.
That's how they should have named them.
Yeah, it would have made it a lot easier to know.
But anyhow, Wiggins.
Wiggins, yes.
Wiggins is telling Big Boss Max that, yeah, we got one. We logged it. We got to call this in.
Like, we know that this one has, like, got evidence that they've done this, like, at least twice before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We totally have incriminating evidence. And Max is all like, ugh, it won't be enough. They won't care.
Mm-hmm,
no
mm-hmm.
one cares about the whales, basically.
Yeah. And so while he is despondent, Wiggins says, hey, we're with you, boss. Quote, whatever it takes, sir.
He's like, don't say that unless you mean it.
And he means it.
He means
Jerry means it, too.
So you know what that means? That means in the next scene, we're going to fire torpedoes at the whaler.
Yeah.
And kill them.
Yeah, fuck them up. Let's go. Stop killing the whales.
And all I can think is, wow, well, that whale that was caught in the net is definitely dead now. It might not have been before, but it is now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But okay. And Max is like, we've crossed over, boys.
Mm-hmm,
we're the
mm-hmm.
bad boys now. So bad. Bad, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they got leather jackets. Except, mm-hmm. that's cruel to the cows. We can't do that.
Then we get the titles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I just want to remind everybody of Roy Scheider's very soothing, very optimistic narration, including the line, we are its guardians, regarding the ocean and the ocean
yes.
environment.
Yes.
So let us judge Sequest actions by that standard as we go through Whale Song, shall we?
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm judging you.
Let's just keep that in mind.
Just going to judge you so hard.
That's the criteria they set. That's the criteria we should use.
Okay. Well, on the Sequest.
Yes.
We go to Krieg, O'Neill, Ortiz, and Ford in the mess.
Mm-hmm.
And Krieg is having an existential crisis about an orange.
Yes, he has a whole monologue about the nature of the oranges provided in the mess hall.
Yes.
The ways they are ideal, perfect, perhaps too perfect, because they are, in truth, simulacra of an orange.
And everyone else is like, but it's an orange. It's good.
He wants just it to be it. Bruised just once. Maybe not quite yet ripe. Why are the oranges so perfect and therefore soulless? It is the flaw that makes the art.
And O'Neill's just like, eat your egg substitute. And so then he goes off about eggs.
He goes off about eggs. He cries out to the heavens that the ice cream has a half-life of 1,400 years. He's sick of eating all this science food.
And then he fixates on Ford's dinner because he just got off a shift. So he's having dinner. Everyone else is having breakfast. And he picks up Ford's not hamburger.
Yes, his veggie burger, his bean burger. His
bean patty. And is like, ugh. This is not right. This is so wrong. We find out that raising cattle was outlawed due to, you know, everything it was doing to the ozone.
Yes. The methane. They outlawed commercial cattle farming.
Yes.
Let's keep that in mind for the future, too.
Uh-huh. I just need to point out O'Neill's, like, juice box.
Yeah?
During this scene. Yeah.
Of course he's got a juice box. He's a little juice box boy.
With, like, the funnest looking straw. As they just listen to Krieg have a meltdown about food. Bridger is having to have a little chat with Admiral Noyce.
Yes.
Who's, you know, like, hey, there's all these missing boats. So the Pentagon wants to meet with you.
Because this is a problem. And Bridger's like, is it though?
Like, they were whaling ships. That's, like, against the law. So is this really a problem? And he's like,
why are the governments of the world sticking their neck out for all these criminals?
Bridger points out that, like, it's been against the law for, like, decades. He's like, yeah, and so smoking, like, cigars. Whatever, people do it.
So's Noyce. Smoking cigars in restaurants, but people still do it. And no, they absolutely do not. Noyce. No one smokes cigars in restaurants.
Noyce. Good sir.
Such a missed shot on what real 2018 would look like. No one smokes anything in restaurants.
So this tells me that Noyce is just like going to like black market restaurants all the time and he doesn't know that it's not done in like the everyday world.
Smoking was starting to go out in restaurants by the time Sequest was like off the air.
It was
like the momentum was starting to go that way.
It was starting by like 2000. It was full-fledged. Like you, it was very rare to find any place. I feel like that
with even with a smoking section, let alone.
Yeah, it was usually just like, I think, places that had like big bars attached to the restaurant type thing. That's when they still had but if they didn't have a bar, they typically didn't have smoking anymore. Let me tell you, the day.
But never cigars.
The day that smoking like stopped being a thing though in restaurants, my life improved significantly. We had a family wedding that I distinctly remember going to in Frankenmuth.
Yes.
When smoking was still allowed.
Where in Frankenmuth?
It was at Bavarian Inn.
Okay.
Because I'm very allergic to cigarette smoke. It makes me very, very sick. Because everyone was freaking smoking at this wedding, I ended up having to sit out in the hallway of the Bavarian Inn for like 90% of this wedding reception because I was so sick. And this was like the late 90s. So it was still very prominent.
I can imagine there being a thing where, like, the Zender family decided, like, all right, one of these is going to be the non-smoking restaurant, and one of these is going to be the smoking restaurant for as long as we can keep it going.
That's why they had all the little rooms.
Yeah.
Smoking room, that's non-smoking room. Yeah, it was not a fun wedding.
Anyhow, like when you're predicting the future, when you're trying to predict 25 years ahead, sometimes you over-predict, like, the banning of commercial beef farming.
Yeah, no.
And sometimes you under-predict change, like, oh yeah, people are still illegally smoking cigars in restaurants all the time.
Yeah, all the time. It's totally fine. No, it's not. Absolutely not.
Sometimes
you have to just stand outside 15 feet from the door.
Sometimes you miss in both directions within 2 minutes.
Yeah, they're all concerned about these whaling ships, and because they have trade agreements with the countries and confederations that they're from.
It's not about, you know, the whaling ship. It's about the Japanese government losing its people to who knows what out there.
So Bridger's going to get picked up to go to the Pentagon.
Yes.
Don't know why this can't just be like a call, but... meanwhile, Krieg is radioing not his good buddy Murray, but his good buddy Bucky? Buckle? Buck something?
Buck something, I tell you what.
And he's like, hey, like, get me meat. And Buck dude is like, no red meat, no real eggs, no alcohol. I'm not helping you. I can't get these things.
Murray would.
Murray would also not be sitting there telling him that he can't brew beer out of genetically modified barley.
Murray would find a way.
Buck dude tried and it didn't work, but Murray would find a way. Murray would know.
He'd know a guy.
He'd know a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd know how you could make that barley work for you. Bridger goes to the Pentagon, and, you know, walks
the Pentagon
all, officially. What?
It's, what, one of the buttons on, the soundboard last time we did Gexter Life.
Oh, was just, Pentagon?
Was just Gex saying, the Pentagon.
The Pentagon? The Pentagon? I forgot about that one.
We had a lot of fun with the Pentagon button.
Yeah. A lot of fun with all of that. Moki didn't have fun. But I think that's where she fell in love with Josh.
Yeah. Anyhow, at the Pentagon. Nath Bridger is introduced to 3 highly decorated military men of America. The one in blue, Matt Smith, no relation, I guess. is played by classic screen-heavy Leo Gordon from dozens and dozens of westerns. He also wrote for shows like Tombstone Territory, Maverick, and Bonanza. Hmm. He's on both sides of the camera on these westerns.
Okay.
He also wrote the film The Wasp Woman,
which
sounds exciting to me.
She's gonna sting ya.
Oh, yes.
Gonna get ya. Bridger is trying to be all official, you know, goes to salute, and they're like, ah, no!
Come on, you're one of us.
We're off duty. He's like, are we? Yeah, have a drink. Have some beef. It's from Argentina.
They've got this, like, at the rarest, like,
I would
roast
not
beef.
Eat it.
They're just carving it. It's falling off the bone.
It's bleeding.
General Smith loves the beef.
They're like, yeah, enjoy. Have this, have that. And he's like, no, I'm good.
Also, it's illegal.
It's illegal. What are we doing here? And Bridger does know the one guy, Frank, head honcho dude, well enough. And is just very like, what am I doing here?
Right.
What is
right.
going on? And so, you know, they're like, yeah, so you've heard about the sub. We want you to hunt it down and kill them.
We really want you to kill them. It's kind of important.
And he's like, no, you have the wrong man. And they're like, yeah, but we got the right boat. Yeah, you're gonna kill them. And if you don't...
One of them really puts their foot in their mouth when they're like, come on, Nathan, don't act like you don't miss the old run and gun once in a while. And his response is, quote, not since I lost my son in combat. And there's a very awkward pause.
They're like, oh yeah, we forgot about that. We forgot about that little fact. So Frank...
Like, these guys seem like they're just declaring DEFCON 2 just to see people jump, just for the fun of it.
What are you gonna do? So Frank dismisses the other two, like, give us the room, gentlemen. And then he's like, okay, here's the deal, Bridger. If you don't go kill him, every crew member on your boat will never have a career in my Navy.
Which is a problem because they're all Americans in this international...
Like, and they're all, like, really fucking good at their job, and they're on, like, the head boat, and, like, wouldn't you want them in your Navy? I feel like that's going to be a problem for you.
There's a lot of other boats in the world, and hey, they aren't all superstars. One of them is Benjamin Krieg.
Krieg is my bro. Krieg is going to go the distance.
Is he? I've watched the show.
You were singing a different tune the last episode. You cannot take back what you said about Krieg.
I just mean from...
Krieg gang.
From the point of view of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they don't know him. They only know his written record. And that is from their point of view.
Are you going against the Krieg gang?
Blood in, blood out. Krieg gang, baby.
He's a ride or die. Like, what are you talking about? I am so upset at you right now.
I just mean...
Just abandoning him.
From this guy's perspective, from where he's sitting...
This guy's an idiot.
He's wrong. He is wrong. But I don't think he would miss Krieg. He would miss Ford. He would miss Hitchcock. I don't think he knows Lucas exists. But...
Well, I think a lot of them don't know Lucas exists. but, like, he would miss Krieg. You know why? Because Ford's not going to be the same without Krieg. He needs his bro.
Just a goober-shaped hole in his heart.
Yes!
there is blackmail afoot. There's the threatening of Nathan's family at sea since he's lost his wife and son.
Yeah.
But really, the whole scene is there to set up the big question that the episode aims to resolve. Look at how... people in different positions treat these laws. Who does the law restrain? Who does it serve? What good is the law anyway?
Mm-hmm. So Bridger gets back to the Sequest, and
after saying goodbye with this ironically proper and stiff salute.
We ain't gonna shake that dude's hand. Fuck him. So he gets back and he's greeted by Crocker and Ford. And
Ford wears his hat so tall.
A lot of them wear their hat really tall.
It's so... he could be a conehead under there. It's so tall.
He immediately asks where Lucas is, and they're like, oh, well, he's probably asleep. Well, wake him up! And so Lucas, very sleepy-eyed, wanders into the captain's room.
With bathrobe continuity. This is the bathrobe he was wearing.
The primary color bathrobe.
Yes. That was in the regulator. Uh-huh. Yes. Because it's when bunks were getting doubled
this
up. Yes.
This bathrobe sticks around. It's something I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
That we reuse costuming.
Something else we see that I appreciate is Bridger's little Sequest model desk ornament.
Yeah.
I would love to have that.
It's
so good.
There is like a Sequest model.
Yes.
That was like sold, and I want one so bad.
I think it's from Revel. Yeah.
I want one. I want to put it up there with my Rocinante. My Rossi and my Sequest. It'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Lucas fills the captain in on his dream, which honestly is facts we could have skipped. Picking up the ladies, going to the beach.
Oh, yes, his actual, I was asleep and my brain did things, REM kind of dream.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
I thought you meant his career dream. Like, no that's important. That's necessary.
No, his lady dreams. His lady dreams. That's how you know they have a good relationship. He shares about his lady dreams.
Bridger assures him this will be brief and he'll let him get right back to it.
And so Bridger starts talking about, like, you know, I think you've done some really great work here. I hope that it's made you think about, like, what you want to do for your future. You know, maybe you're just, like, trying things on, seeing what you like.
And Lucas insists, no, I know exactly what I want to do with my life. This. I've committed myself to the Science Navy life.
And then he's like, wait, am I being fired? And he's like, no, but I'm pulling you off Sequest. And Lucas is immediately like, what did I do wrong? I can change.
Uh-huh.
Don't abandon me, father.
Of course he is. Like, Bridger knows Lucas so well, but he never gets past this blind spot that Lucas is going to interpret anything through abandonment.
Yes.
That's always going to be his first, like, reaction.
Yeah. Bridger, like, doesn't even address it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And is just like, no, no, it's like, I'm resigning.
Mm-hmm.
I am leaving. Ford's going to take over. And I don't know if this is going to be a place you want to be after that.
Right, right. So the question hanging in the air is, would Lucas want to be here? Would it be a good place for him if Sequest became too military? What mm-hmm. if it were a proper warship?
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting question we might spend an entire season answering in the future.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. just
possibly.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, like, does Lucas want to be a part of the military instead of a science ship? How does Lucas fit in here if Bridger's not here? Questions. So many questions. So Lucas is like, wait, what happened at the Pentagon? Like,
the Pentagon. I gotta, like, ask Josh for that.
He's like, you tell me. And Bridger's like, oh no, I can't. He's like, I'm your friend. And that.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes Bridger go, word vomit. Like, here is everything that happened. They want me to go do this thing. I don't want to do it.
I'm being asked to be an executioner of this vigilante who I kind of agree with. Like, enough to not want to kill the guy.
Yeah.
And Lucas is a huge fan of the ship that's killing illegal whaling ships.
Well, his best friend is the dolphin.
Right?
So, like, kind of makes sense.
Lucas wishes he'd start shooting, like, the tuna trawlers, too, you know?
Just to be safe. Like, let's do this. And so Lucas kind of storms out of the room and leaves Bridger alone.
To continue the farewell tour, back to Ford and Crocker, who have just been standing there in sea deck the whole time, or in the launch bay the whole time.
So, they're on the bridge now.
Oh,
this was on the bridge.
Right, that's right.
It would have been funny, though.
It would have been really funny.
Well, he never said dismiss, so they just stayed there. They love to follow rules. So, Bridger is handing Ford his resignation letter to be sent to the Pentagon.
The Pentagon.
Ford
can't be in charge 3 weeks in a row. People are going to get ideas about what's going on behind the scenes.
And he's like, no, I can't accept this. And like, no, you have to. It's an order. Mm. And you're going to get me a shuttle and give me the land. And then I'll figure out how to get home from there. And Ford's like, but this is your home.
But he insists that he's going to resign. He cannot be forced into a corner like this. And Ford says goodbye and calls him Nathan. For the first time, he uses his given name.
Yes. Crocker gives him a handshake, which he is not sure about doing.
I really thought this would have been a hug. He seems like a hugger.
Yeah.
He's a big bear of a man, of the teddy variety.
And so Bridger tells them to take, you know, good care of the boat, and he leaves the bridge. Mm-hmm. And he goes down to Darwin.
Yes, the goodbye tour has reached sea deck.
And he's telling Darwin that it's time to go home, it's time to leave the Sequest.
Darwin is confused. All he really understands is that Bridger is sad.
Yes. Because he's like, this is my home. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But they are interrupted by Westphalen coming in, who has heard the news. And
this scene is great because we've talked previously about how invested the fandom is, certain segments at least, in a romantic connection between Nathan Bridger and Kristen Westphalen.
I mean, it's the only relationship I want for him. Like, romantic relationship.
Right, right.
Like, any other ones that they try? No.
Up to this point, is it really there? Like, they are both parental figures to the same teenage boy, so that implies a connection between them. But, like, they're very professional.
They're very professional.
They have a very science-based relationship up to this point.
Friend, you see more friend.
Yes,
but
they are warm with each other.
This definitely made people go.
Because what happens is she sits next to them and just the way they look at each other, you can understand an entire romantic connection that has never been on the page at this moment, just in their eyes, both of them mutually. And I think, wow, what incredible acting. The scene then ends with them kissing, and you're like, oh my God. I just speed ran an entire story in 90 seconds.
It's very good. It's so really good. It's such a, like, okay, so this is like a fall season show, right? Like, we have the time to explore this type of stuff.
Yes.
But it also is like, this is such a good way to move something along quickly and like highlight it really well.
And it is quick because it's not really there. Mm-hmm. Certainly not as directly as a kiss, but even as directly as the way they look at each other in the previous 15 episodes.
And then it's just like established and everyone's like, yes, absolutely. We're going to make 25 bajillion fan videos about this using that specific scene.
Yes. That and, dancing when she's possessed by a ghost. Every time.
Yes. Over on the sub, they are going after the whaler. And they fire and they fucking miss and they blow up a cruise ship.
How did you fuck up this bad? You fucked up so bad.
And definitely killed a lot of people.
The torpedo they fired went under the whaler.
By a lot.
And hit the cruise ship that they didn't see behind it.
Somehow
you have radar. You have sonar. What are you doing? How did you fuck up this bad?
You should have known it was around and thought, maybe we should wait to blow up this ship until the cruise ship's out of the area.
So the save,
just so they don't, like, see us do it.
So the Save the Whales crusade has now taken innocent lives. The situation has changed.
Bridger's walking on a nice beach.
Entirely clad in denim.
Yes. It's very 1994.
Well, 2018 had a big 1994 resurgence in the fashion.
People were still wearing a lot of denim in 2018. Bridger, after his little walk, is listening to the radio.
Probably looking for the baseball game, I guess. Judging by how his son dresses.
So he is getting the news, though, about how the sub attacked the cruise ship, and there's a lot of casualties, and, it's not going to be good. Also, it's former Bill Clinton's birthday.
Yeah.
And our former president, Bill Clinton. Let's say that.
Like, he changed his name to William in the future.
The ex-president formerly known as Bill Clinton.
It's now an unpronounceable symbol. This is about the time for that, I think. This is the era of the artist, right?
Yeah, it is.
So if this were the 72nd birthday of William Jefferson Clinton, that puts this episode at August 20th, 2018. However, if you were to freeze frame on Bridger's resignation letter, it is dated February 2019.
See, this is why no one knows how old Lucas is.
No one knows.
No one fucking knows how old that kid is.
What? Now,
that becomes a plot later. He doesn't know how old he is.
What do you think happened in the 25 years between when this episode is conceived and when it is set to move Bill Clinton's birthday 6 months forward? Was he in some sort of cryogenic freeze accident?
Maybe.
Maybe they tested some sort of relativistic speed space capsule on him.
Maybe they thought there was going to be a different Bill Clinton president. There's going to be a second one. And it's not the one we think it is.
Okay, it's the one that was born 6 months later.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, became president later.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two. Like how there's, there are two Bushes. They're
two Clintons, Bill Clintons.
And it was just weird.
Almost
crazy.
Identical age. Not quite. Just really close.
Really close. It's a common name. There's a lot of people named Bill.
Sure. Some of them Clintons.
One uses one L.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah. I see. Okay. Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, Bridger is listening to this news report and he's like, well, this changes everything, he says to himself silently in his mind.
Yes. Back on the sub, Max is lighting some candles and saying a prayer, I guess?
Yeah, we're feeling some solemn regrets back in Vigilante Land.
Yeah. But he decides to go to bed. And the dudes are like, hey, what are we gonna do now? And he's like, what do you mean? Like, we just killed a lot of innocent people.
They're gonna be coming for us. They're gonna be after us. The jig is up. The game is over. And he says, no. Because Max Scully is so cynical about public attention, he thinks that if they just sleep on it, no one's gonna care. Because no one cared about the whales in the first place. Who's gonna care about these people? A country gets invaded. 2 days later, everyone's moved on to watching the World Series. Who cares? We're fine.
Yeah.
One of his lines is, quote, you think a bomb delivered in a suitcase is less moral than one delivered by a Navy jet? He's just going.
He's going.
He's riffing. He's just...
and the other two guys are like, okay, well, we're going to leave and turn ourselves in.
And, like, I think Max Scully is a really well-performed guest actor. I am enjoying what Jonathan Banks is doing with this, because I think that in this scene, it is clear that he does not believe the words he is saying. Mm-hmm. But he's decided he has to make himself believe it. He has to make himself hard in order to keep going, because the mission is still that important.
Yeah.
He cannot stop.
Yeah.
And the way to not stop is to become this monster man that's scaring away his crew.
Yeah, and they're scared. They're leaving.
Yeah,
they're gone.
Like, no, they do not appear for the remainder of the episode.
Peace, bye. So Bridger goes to a really fancy house, and we see that it's Dolphin Dude.
Yes.
Malcolm.
Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo, played by sometime writer of Sequest.
And Bridger's like, hey, you know who's doing it. You know who's blowing up the boats, don't you? And he's like, I make it my business not to know these things. You totally fucking know who it is. Who is it? And he's like, well, you know him too. So then we go watch a video obituary.
Yes, we watch like old film reels from 2011. You know, when they had film reels.
That is talking about Maximilian Scully and him dying.
The news report insinuates or shares that there are rumors he was assassinated by the fishing industry, who were fed up with all of his activism.
And Bridger's like, are you telling me he's not dead? And he's like, nope. He's like, but I spoke at this dude's funeral. He's like, yeah, but like he came to me. He wanted to get a boat. He wanted to go hide. Like, it's no different than how I wanted to hide from the world, how you did, how the regulator. They're a circle of friends. What the fuck was Bridger doing in his life?
Bridger continues to know everyone in the ocean, but also this strange fraternity of men who have experienced tragedies and remake themselves includes Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo.
I'm like, what? What were you doing before, dude? I thought you were always just the Dolphin Weirdo.
Is the regulator coming over for bridge night with Vern and I guess your grandma?
Yeah, he really likes mom. They get along great.
They would. Both the regulator and Vern definitely would. I also like Malcolm's detail that, like, yeah, it was his own bomb that blew him up. He got the fuse wrong. Which is very accurate to early 20th century anarchists.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So back on the Sequest, Krieg is sneaking into his room with some food for Lucas.
Oh, right. There's a B plot in this episode. That's right.
Lucas, who's hiding out in the air duct, sneaking through the air ducts to go get socks from his room. Because mm-hmm. here's the thing. He was supposed to be taken off the boat Krieg. And Krieg, like, didn't do that. And so he's a stowaway now, hiding out.
Could you believe that he's so very, very angry at Captain Nathan Bridger due to his abandonment issues? Could you have seen this coming?
Because Krieg's like, if Bridger finds out that, like, I didn't take you off this boat, and he's like, well, Bridger's never coming back. Oh, the abandonment.
He's so immediately catastrophic that, like, Bridger told him the whole story. Like, I don't know how much he went into detail about the Pentagon meeting, but, like, the boat is in the hands of bad dudes with a totally different philosophy, and I don't think you're going to thrive in that environment. And what he takes from it is, he hates me, he's dead to me.
Because he's a teenager!
Yeah!
Who has been unloved by his family and finally found his father! And has been abandoned again! Krieg's like, tries to, you know, go comfort him, you know. Bridger's doing what he thought he should do. And, like, you know, no one can find out about you, because otherwise it's, like, my behind. And Lucas is like, well, I'll just tell them I blackmailed you.
Which is very believable. He's a teenager.
Yeah, you know, and it's fine.
I think it says a lot that Lucas would rather smell his own socks inside a cramped ventilation duct than smell whatever's going on in Krieg's quarters.
Yes.
It's a very smelly room.
Yeah.
We talk so much about how smelly Lucas's room is, and it's less smelly than Krieg's room. Well, we have clear evidence.
Well, Lucas's might smell like fish. Krieg still smells like squid poop. Krieg has another secret going on, not just a teenager hiding in his room. He has two pounds of frozen real beef.
Mm-hmm.
That he is trying to thaw out.
It is a big hunk, just shapeless lump, frost all over it, ground beef, like you would get from the store, except no plastic wrap. It's in a towel,
like surrounded by like his pants, which is interesting. So I'm like, you're trying to thaw it out, but you're also like keeping it warm, I guess. Like,
there is some subtle storytelling around when the commercial beef ban went into place due to how they talk about it. Krieg has no practical experience thawing ground beef.
No, he ate beef as a child.
As a child at 4th of July.
His dad cooking burgers.
Uh-huh.
And this fond memory, but he has never, like, done it himself. He has never had to thaw beef.
He's never had to cook it. He's read books. But, like, but Lucas, on the other hand, has never had beef in his life. He doesn't understand what the big deal is.
Krieg, it's dead cow. Like, why are you, like, obsessed with this?
That's not food to him. There is this beef-based generation gap in this scene.
Yes.
And I find it so fun.
He's just like, why do you want to eat this? And, like, Krieg gets called to, like, the bridge, and he's like, don't touch my beef. And he's like, I won't. Believe me, I do not want to. This is disgusting. Like,
that's smart. That's really smart writing.
Yeah. What kills me is this beef ban, like, never comes up again in the entire damn show.
Not true. Not true.
Not true? When does it come up?
Season 3!
Comes up in season 3?
It does!
Does it come up in season 3?
I don't remember when, but I promise you it does.
Okay, well, it, like, rarely comes up.
Yeah.
It is not, like, we don't spend a lot of time talking about, like, food.
That's true. That's true.
I feel like this is the one episode that you get, like, in a sci-fi show that's like, we're gonna teach you about the world through food right now, and it, like, rarely happens.
The one episode of Battlestar Galactica where a labor movement starts and they threaten to strike, and then we never talk about that again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah!
We talk a lot about different things that are banned or that they don't have, or that you have to go to, like, black market bars for.
Sure.
But yeah, not, like, just normal everyday food quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
Bridger comes back on board the Sequest, and Ford is greeting him, and he's all like, you know, requests permission to come aboard, you know, sir, and he's like, this is your boat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, you sent my letter of resignation. I'm no longer the captain. He's like, I never sent that. Technically, once you wrote it, like, your orders didn't mean anything, so, like, you know, I just kind of have it right here, sir.
So Ford, as a stickler for regulation in the strictest sense, made the last 15 minutes of the episode not matter.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah. Where it's like, mm-mm, no, you're going to change your mind. I know you. I know you. That smart motherfucker. Mm-hmm. He knows him so well. Mm-hmm. I do love, like, Krieg and Crocker, like, laughing about this behind him.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
The look that Bridger gives him to, like, shut up.
My question is, how long did this take? How much time did Sequest spend just, like, puttering around, not doing what the Pentagon ordered it to do?
Well, they obviously had to wait for, like, a supply drop. That's how Krieg got the,
sure,
the beef.
Sure, yeah.
They got had to get, you know, Lucas off the ship, too, I guess.
Wink, wink, nudge, yeah.
I don't know. A couple days. Getting ready.
That's some slow beef.
Some slow beef.
Met that guy. He's lovely. Met his wife, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Took me a second, but yeah. I remember when you went to explain to me, oh, slow beef is like, you know, I was like, I know who slow beef is. Bridger's like, okay, fine, I'm the captain. Let's get going. We gotta go get a sub.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back on land.
Oh my god!
Boy, are we? Yes!
So
Max Scully has found himself in some sort of sailor bar. And what do sailor bars have in the far-off year of 2018? Well, they have arcade games.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one of the most popular arcade games is, of course, your 3D fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
Naturally.
I love a 3D fighter.
So what if there were two cabinets side by side, both controlled with dual joysticks, no buttons, just mm-hmm. two joysticks?
Yeah.
And you are controlling not images on a screen. No, no, no. You are controlling hologram people in a circular dirt pit beating the hell out of each other as played by live human actors mm-hmm. with, like, polygonal face paint to sort of, and, like, muscle padding to make them look a little fake. And then when one beats the other down, they become holograms that then fall into the floor.
I love it so much.
It's so much.
It's my.
It's
like the entire bar is like watching and placing bets
yes!
and cheering and like bloodshed. Yeah.
Because it looks like they're at some place with like fucking blood sport happening.
Yes.
Because it's real actors. But then you see them controlling it and I think, oh, is this like Hugh Jackman Real Steel, but they're human androids? But then they become digital and fall into the floor.
Yeah. It's so good. I want more of this.
Yes!
I want so much more of this.
Every time I've said, man, I wish we saw more of the world outside the ship, I shouldn't have been talking about the global geopolitics of the UEO. I should have meant this.
Mm-hmm. So good. Max tries to get the guy to like play again. And he's like, nah, you owe me a beer though. Let's go get that beer. And so then they have like over a beer, a chat about how Max is trying to find a ship to ship out with. And he's like, oh, we'll check the like job board.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, no, like I'm looking for like a whaler. You know where I can find a whaler?
Mm-hmm,
he's like,
mm-hmm.
What makes you think that there'd be a whaler? For all you know. Apparently very under the table about there being whaling ships, though everyone, like, knows there's whaling ships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can't put it on the board, because it's illegal. But if you know a guy, like this guy with his little flat cap
mm-hmm.
and his big sweater, this bar contact is named in the credits Mike Lutz. His character name is never said. He's played by Jack McGee, a character actor with over 200 credits and counting. He's still going.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, he looked, like, incredibly familiar.
He is one of the most prolific guys who primarily plays people without names.
It works.
He's probably been, like, 80 guy-moving crates in various Law & Orders. But some of his more spotlit roles include George Ward in The Fighter and John Poloni in Moneyball.
He gives him the scoop on, like, well, there might be this, like, you know, shipping out. And mm-hmm. if you're there by, like, this time, like, you know, you could be on the crew. But if you're not there, like, we're not going to wait for you.
So the whale hunter has a lead.
Mm. Ah. So back on the Sequest, Lucas is sneaking to the moon pool to talk to Darwin, because Darwin's suddenly back on board, and he's like, hey buddy, you're back! And Bridger is like, yeah, he is!
So are you! Wait a minute!
Lucas is like, what are you doing here? And he's like, that's my question! Because neither of them are supposed to be there. And so Lucas just starts rambling about how, like, you know, well, Krieg took me up to the surface, but I made him bring me back because, like, I, you know, I told him I was going to get a tattoo and join the Italian Navy. And, like,
what tattoo would Lucas get?
Dolphin.
Dolphin.
Absolutely.
He get, like, a pixel art dolphin? He get some sort of digi dolphin?
No, I'm thinking, like, a very, very, like, 90s, early 2000 dolphin.
A Lisa Frank dolphin?
No. But, okay, if you take, like, the classic dolphin statues that every, like, girl had and just, like, make that a tattoo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's, like, jumping out of some waves. Yeah. The least manly dolphin tattoo you can get.
Sparkles.
Yeah.
Yeah, lens flare on the tattoo.
Yeah, I give it, like, anime girl eye.
Dolphin with big eyelashes.
Yes. And, like, winking.
So that's your next tattoo, right?
No.
Anime dolphin?
Absolutely not.
Come on, anime dolphin.
I would get Lisa Frank dolphin before I get that.
All right.
And you know I'm not, like, much of a color tattoo person.
That's true.
Bridger cuts him off, like, just stop rambling. And Lucas is like, okay, fine, Sequest is my home too, and I'm not leaving my home. And then they have a hug.
Yes.
So they have a big hug.
Yes.
And Bridger's like, because Lucas asks him, like, you know, why did you come back? And he's like, well, you know, I realize that the world's not perfect, and sometimes you got to do things you don't want to do, and I missed you. And that just heals Lucas's abandonment.
His little heart.
His little heart.
Is welded back together.
And they have a good dad hug. And things are fine.
Anyway, have you seen Westphalen?
I got someone else I gotta go home.
We got some paperwork. Yeah, paperwork.
So meanwhile, in Krieg's room, he is singing a burger song.
He's singing Cheeseburger in Paradise, a burger song.
It's a burger song.
A burger, sure.
He's singing the burger song.
The burger song, thank you very much. Jimmy Buffett, still around in real 2018 and Sequest 2018.
But not anymore.
Well, it's not 2018 anymore.
And so while he's singing his little song with his baseball cap on backwards, getting ready for, like, yes, the beef has defrosted. We are ready. He pulls a signed baseball bat out of a case.
Signed by Nolan Ryan III. And he apologizes to Nolan Ryan III for using his signed baseball bat in such a manner. But it's okay, because, you know, he was never the pitcher his grandfather was.
And so he starts carving it up to be wood chips for his barbecue.
A barbecue that he has built a single patty size cooker out of a bedpan.
Yes.
Because this is so surreptitious, so hush-hush.
Yes. So, over on the sub, Max is chasing the whaler. Mm-hmm. And back on the Sequest, they are coming up to the Irish Sea. They are getting ready. Krieg is in his room putting the finishing touches on his burger. He's cooked that burger. There are toppings going on it. He's getting ready to have that bite.
And then red alert sounds, everyone to battle stations, and he has to stow his burger and run to the bridge where Krieg doesn't work. Why are you going to the bridge?
He does work on the bridge.
As a substitute?
He's off in there. He's going for his officer's thing, too. Okay, so, like, he has to get more bridge time.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah. We are looking at some whisker footage. They have found whales.
And they're going to follow the whales to find the whalers. And when you find the whalers, you're going to find Maximilian Scully. And this operation goes off without a hitch instantly, because once Bridger decides that he's going to find you, he's going to find you.
Yes. He's really good at
it. It's another demonstration of the overwhelming power of the technical capabilities of Sequest DSV and the personal capabilities of Captain Nathan Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying numbers, he's calling out orders, everything's exactly right. And they find the guy in like 10 minutes in the whole ocean.
Yes. Everyone's on the bridge. Everyone mm-hmm. has rushed there. Everyone's paying attention. They are finding the sub. Max has found his whaler.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to shoot at it. And as he fires this torpedo, the Sequest swoops down and takes the hit instead.
Mm-hmm. And he instantly knows that he has been found by Nathan Bridger because Sequest is very, very large. It is a distinctive ship.
It's very well known.
So Bridger orders them full speed ahead to be a shield, and they take some light damage. The maglev gets wet.
Mm-hmm. And so Bridger, so he orders Crocker to take a launch to the whaler to arrest the crew over there.
If you can just arrest whalers like that, why haven't you just been arresting whalers like that? This wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, maybe. I guess it's because none of the actual Navy wants to do it except for him, because they're all told not to.
He's an unstoppable ocean monster. He can do it.
Yeah.
It takes zero time.
They're not always by the whalers. It's not all of Bridger's responsibility. There's a whole lot of other Navy out there and a lot of seas.
I'm just saying, I never saw him arrest a whaler before. It seems like it's really easy for them. Every whaler they arrested is one that wouldn't have been blown up.
I agree.
Whalers don't hang out in trenches. Is that what it
yes,
is?
Yes, they're right. Too far down. This is the first time they've been, like, in the Irish Sea. They're, like, never over there.
It's true, they're always in, like, the Caribbean mm-hmm. or Southeast Asia. Yeah.
It's very different. They're not in the right seas for, like, the times that the whales are there. So that's why it's the rest of the Navy's responsibility. But we all know that they're getting, like, bought off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're eating their roast beef.
Yeah. They fire a shot, though, at the sub to disable it, and they do. And Bridger tries to radio over to Max, but he's not responding. And O'Neill's like, oh, well, maybe they can't hear us. And it's like, oh, no, he can hear us. I'm going to take a crab over there.
He pilots a sea crab. Yeah, I love the sea crab.
No
hyper-reality probe this time, but all the other toys are coming out. I guess Darwin doesn't get his Aqualung, but a lot of the toys are coming out.
Yeah. So he takes the crab over there, gets on board, and Max is waiting for him.
And it is time for a speech-off.
Speech-off!
Well, Max gives a big one about how it is necessary. It is what needs to be done. Every time Bridger is trying to be reasonable, try to make him see reason, hey, you killed a lot of people who were just on vacation, dude.
Mm-hmm.
He instead recommits himself that the ends justify the means because no one else is doing anything towards these ends. And he's gotten himself to the point where he says, eternal damnation, so be it. That is heroism, Nathan.
Using first names.
Mm-hmm. So I think this is the answer to the question that the episode comes up with for itself. This is the good of laws. They stop good people from making themselves bad.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we have these rules, and that is why we ought to follow them, because when they are lax, good men push themselves to these evil ends and evil outlooks in order to justify it.
Yeah. So Bridger's like, well, you know, I'm going to have to take you back with me. He's like, well, then you're going to have to kill me. He's like, okay, like the choice is yours. All like right. You decide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so Max is like, well, can I have a moment with my ship?
Because he's been so sentimental with this hand-me-down he got from Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo.
Yes. So Max goes to like a different part of the sub and starts pulling on stuff and opens or torpedo
mm-hmm.
patch.
Yeah.
And launches himself out of it.
You just hear a whoosh.
And Pritchard goes back there and is like, wait, where is he? Oh, shit.
I hope he's a really good swimmer. What depth are we at?
you're in a sub. You're in a fucking sub. What are the trenches like around here? So Pritchard goes back to the Sequest, doesn't tell anyone anything, is just like, launch a torpedo.
He tells Ford to just open fire and sink the dang thing. He is covering up his former friend's escape, but disguising it as an execution.
And, like, Lucas comes over and is like, did you just kill him? And he's like, no, that was his choice. What?
Lucas has just had his heart healed by the embrace of his surrogate father, and now thinks he just shot a hero in the back of the head.
But we know, the viewers,
yes,
that Max is just out there swimming in the middle of the ocean.
Just treading water in the
like land not to be seen in any direction.
I guess Ortiz is just figuring it out and deciding to keep quiet because, like, they were finding 2 parts per million of the fuel trail to follow this ship.
Yeah.
Ortiz knows there's a dude swimming out there. There's no way he doesn't know.
But we're not going to say that. We're not going to tell Lucas. We're not going to tell anyone. So, like, later on the Sequest, Krieg is making another perfect burger.
Mm-hmm.
Getting all ready. Getting all topped. Getting ready to have a bite. And there is a knock on his door. And he quickly, like, hides it away as much as he can. And Bridger mm-hmm. comes in. And he's just like, hey, you know, I want to thank you for disobeying my order and not taking Lucas ashore. Krieg's like, oh, yeah, you know, of course. You know, he's like little brother to me. And Bridger's like, oh, I hope not. No, 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 we're going to wipe. That is not. No, he is not like a little brother to you at all.
So you're saying Bridger is not Krieg gang. Is Bridger dead to you?
No.
Okay. Because all right. There's some wiggle room.
No, because here's the thing is that Krieg gang can exist, but Krieg is also one of the worst influences to Lucas, but in the brotherly way. It's the way that I love, but that makes Bridger go, CPS would not like this. But then Bridger's like, wait, what's all this? Looking at his makeshift bedpan grill.
He asks, what's that I smell? A question often asked in Krieg's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
With a different answer every time.
And he's like, is that a cheeseburger? Is that real? And he's like, yeah, he's like, those are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he makes Krieg hand over the burger.
this connection to his childhood, something living with a soul. He can taste the fear. That's why he wants the burger.
And so Bridger takes it before Krieg can ever have a bite.
Mm-hmm.
And
he makes these whimper noises as he's handing it over. It's so pathetic and sad and funny.
And so he goes into the hallway, closes the door.
We see a trash receptacle for the first time
ever
in the hallways of Sequest.
First time ever on Sequest.
The labels are so big. It's like Adam West Batman. It is so clearly labeled trash receptacle.
I love that they installed the first trash can outside Krieg's room.
Immediately outside.
And it's like a fancy one that has like a hatch
mm-hmm.
that closes.
It's got suction. There's a little noise.
Yeah. It's just Krieg's so smelly. And so Bridger's going to throw it away. And then he's like, wait, let me look around.
He looks left, looks right. He just chomps down half this burger in a single breath before coming to his senses and putting it down the trash.
Where it goes... And that's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode.
But not quite.
So yeah, we end with everyone having a thought about, yes, the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. Look at Ford with the letter, the resignation letter,
mm-hmm.
being changed by thinking about what the law does, what following it or neglecting to follow it does, who it serves, and coming out different on the other side.
Yes.
Yes. of the right but too much people in Sequest, or episodes in Sequest, I think this is the one with the most to say and the least, like, outright thoughtless ideology behind it. It's at least going for nuance and finding something somewhere. But yes, Bob fact.
Bob fact. So whales.
Whales. Bob's got to tell us about whales.
Yeah, blue whales are the largest creature on the history of the Earth.
And the whale population is rebounding. But did you know that cetaceans such as whales and dolphins evolved from land-dwelling mammals?
That's what they tell me.
Again, that's a threefer. That's three Bob facts.
He speaks so fast.
He's so fast!
The only people who speak faster are, like, the Jeopardy clue givers.
The Micro Machines guy?
So do you have a Bob fact?
I've got a Bob fact. Nolan Ryan did indeed have a grandson who was pitching in the year 2018. He was named Jackson Ryan.
Dang it.
He was a pitcher on his high school team.
Dang it.
And he used a specially designed glove designed to allow him to both throw and catch with the same hand.
Oh.
Due to his cerebral palsy.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. So congrats. I don't know if Jackson Ryan stuck with pitching in the 6 years since, seven now, but there you go. They pretty much called that one, sort of.
Yeah.
Additional Bob fact. Baseball bats are traditionally made of ash wood. Cooking with ash wood provides a flavor best suited to red meat, onions, and cheese.
Oh.
Krieg knows what he's doing.
Oh.
Yeah. Good job, Krieg gang.
He read it in a book.
Do you have a Bob fact?
Yes. About blue whales.
Tell me about blue whales.
I got two facts for you. So their only natural predator is orcas.
Okay.
Orcas are like tough little bastards going after the largest creature in the history of the planet.
Yes, billionaires.
That too. Love them. Sink the ship.
Maximilian Scully, the orca of the land.
He's like, eat the rich, orca ship. Yes.
Yeah.
That like Lisa Frank orca.
He should have painted his
boat.
Sub
yeah.
with orca markings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Fuck that ship up. Why wasn't he... Okay, you know what he should have been doing? He should have been stealing the, like, vocoder technology so he could go talk to orcas and tell them to go sink the ships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because orcas are not bound by human law.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect crime.
Yeah.
Because it's not a crime.
I love all the... anytime an orca is popping up in the news for messing with the boat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Love it. Keep going, little fuckers. So the other part of my Bob fact here is that while most blue whales feed almost exclusively on krill, the North Indian Ocean species, because there are several, there's four with the possibility of a fifth.
Okay.
There, I think there's like a fifth one that they're not quite sure yet if it's like another subspecies or not.
Right, if it's fully speciated, sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so this other one in the Northern Indian Ocean actually feeds predominantly on a type of shrimp.
Okay.
Instead. And for them to do that, they actually like dive deeper and for longer periods of time than like any other blue whale. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, so there you go.
Thank you very much for the Bob fact, dear.
So
what'd you think about episode 16 whale song?
It's good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say this is one that I don't rewatch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think I rewatched the Krieg parts of it a lot, actually. But, like, I skip other parts of it. So, like, I didn't remember at all that, like, Bridger goes to Malcolm. Like, I was like, wait, what? When does this happen?
It is a weird little insert, because, like, he's just in that one scene.
Yeah, and you totally think, like, Bridger's just straight up going back to the boat. But if he didn't go to Malcolm, he wouldn't have known who this dude was. Like, Malcolm's the whole reason this, like, worked.
Right, right.
Like, this isn't a top-tier episode for me, but I think having rewatched it in the whole, it's higher up than what I thought it was.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I did not remember much about it going in, but watching it now, having watched the future, I think this episode is foundational to a lot of things in this television program's future.
Yes.
Like, you can see a lot of seeds planted in here that will be nurtured and sprout
there's a lot
many
of,
months in the future of Whiskers, we share knowledge regarding Sequest.
There's a lot of questions asked that we will ask in the future.
And I have to assume that this is due to those questions, those ideas, just like rattling around in Patrick Hasberg's head as he continues to be executive producer throughout the run of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I don't think we can say for anyone else who currently has a producer credit on Sequest.
No. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
It has a surprisingly large cast.
It does. It does.
Usually, the standard is for television in general, but this program has certainly exemplified it. If we have named characters in Act 1 of the episode, they're going to be there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That is so not true in this episode.
We introduce so many people that we only check in with once.
Max's boys say they're leaving and they leave. They don't like come back with secret information, you know? Malcolm gone.
Noyce
gone.
The Pentagon dudes?
The bar contact. He's like really spotlit. He's a fully drawn guy just in like costuming and casting. Then he's gone.
Yeah, it's like just, it's all these like one and dones. It's very, very odd for a show.
Because that means you have to hire so many more people to carry all these plot beats and bits of exposition.
Yeah.
Like, this is a really ambitious episode. Like, this could have been a two-parter.
Yeah, it could have.
Like you could have taken this episode, stretched some things, padded some things.
Could have let Lucas had a longer crisis about being abandoned.
You would have had Ford eventually have to say something back to Pearl and get some UEO orders while Bridger's having a bigger adventure on land in his faux retirement. But you could have done it, and then those decisions would have made more sense, because that is the way a film often casts. But yeah, Whale Song. Good. I like this one. I like this one a lot better than I remembered.
Same. Mm-hmm. Same, yeah.
But also, while preparing for today's episode, we watched another featurette provided on the Blu-ray box set available at your local Menards and other retailers. A 11 and change minute interview, a little documentary from Brian Spicer about his experience as one of the recurring directors of Sequest Season 1.
Yeah.
Again, this is his third episode that we've watched. There will be several to come. Two really significant ones, counting the second season premiere he did. I thought it was interesting how he mentioned he came on because Spielberg saw something he did and then asked him to join the show because it was, quote, having some troubles.
Yeah.
And they took a few weeks off filming to rewrite and rework some things. And that's when he joined the team.
Yeah.
Tommy Thompson is not named, but we know exactly what they were talking about.
Yeah, they take some time throughout this featurette to talk about a few different things, but one like the CGI in the show. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, just like how much CGI is used and how that is not the norm of the time, and especially not for TV shows. And he talks about how, you know, each episode has like over 100 different CGI shots, which is absolutely unheard of. And so much of that was possible because they did it in-house.
Right.
So they were paying people
for time.
For time versus like
per shot. The only real limit they had is you got 3 weeks because we're making 23 episodes. So that is your limit, not a shot list, which is, totally different process and leads to totally different results.
Yeah.
He also was impressed with like how large the casts were, like we were just talking a minute ago, how large the sets were that they built. Again, his first episode was the Library of Alexandria outbuilding, and when we did that episode on Treasures of the Mind, it was the title, we talked about how impressive that set was and how huge it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Also the story of when they were shut down for the earthquake for a while.
Yes, and how there were cracks in the set, in the mm-hmm. studio, and then they're like, wait, who are these people in these, like, hazmat suits? And they're like, oh yeah, we gotta shut you down for a few weeks because there might be asbestos from the cracks.
Mm-hmm. More on that in an upcoming episode that is... more directly impacted, but good stories. That's fun. Also, his one story about Roy Scheider was him cracking a Jaws joke on set.
Yeah.
Like, in camera rehearsal, instead of saying the actual line, saying, we're going to need a bigger boat, and everyone went nuts for that. Oh, that Roy.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I was like, that would be great.
I think it's a little funny that that's his only Roy Scheider story.
It was 11 minutes, it was, and they spent
there's a lot to talk
so much,
about.
Well, and they spent so much damn time in this little featurette. What bugged me was just showing footage of episodes without, like, voiceover.
Yeah, did they ever show, like, his face? It was like they a talking head without the head. It's all clips.
Well, and it wasn't continuous talking. They kept pausing for clips, and I was like, so really, this 11-minute featurette was, like, 5 minutes. So this dude did not have time to share stories.
True. But speaking of things he doesn't talk about, there is this
season
like,
two?
Yeah, there's this subtle disavowal of
it's like
season
the most
two.
Awkward fucking ending.
Like, again, we don't hear the questions he's being asked, but it sounds to me like he's asked about season two. What he says, whether that's the question or not, is that, oh yeah, I directed the premiere of that one. That was fun.
And then I had nothing to do with the rest of it. I have no comment. I have no idea what happened.
I went to direct some movies. I really don't know what was happening back on the show on season two. Like, oh, okay. Then we cut to credits on this little featurette. Okay, cool. Again, I wish I knew the question he was answering, because it sure sounds like a, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure the movie he went to film instead was the Power Rangers movie. That's where the timeline lines up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Never saw it.
You want to talk about a...
Wait, go back. I watched that.
You watched Veritas the Quest?
That was one of my shows that got canceled. That was on as the same time as, I think, Miracles. It was like the same.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they both got
2003,
canceled.
2004,
like,
yeah.
Within a couple weeks of each other. I was really pissed.
He was a producer on Veritas the Quest, which got canceled. Yeah. Lone Gunman, which only went for one season.
Veritas, I've never rewatched. I could not actually tell you what that was about. But I know it had the kid who was in... a bunch of Disney Channel movies.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure he was in the Leprechaun one.
Sure.
And the Deep End of the Ocean, which is not a Disney Channel movie.
Mm-hmm.
But has Joshua Jackson, who I was trying to remember the name of a few episodes back.
Can we connect this to that camping movie, Camp Nowhere?
Joshua Jackson, I think, is in that.
All right, there we go. 6 degrees of separation. We did it.
I think isn't he in that? He's in Camp Nowhere. He's like the main kid.
Anyhow, Brian Spicer is still acting as a producer and a director to this day. So congratulations.
Yes, he is.
You mean yes to Joshua Jackson being in Camp Nowhere?
Yeah,
he was
the main guy.
Yeah.
Jessica Alba was in that. I didn't remember that, actually. I forgot that.
Are we going to do an episode on Camp Nowhere?
It does have Christopher Lloyd. He's great.
It does. I love the sentence structure of the description of Veritas the Quest on IMDb.
Yeah.
I love that it starts with, the show is about. That's not how these things generally begin, but the show is about a group of relic hunters searching around the world for mysterious artifacts and their meaning. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
starring Colby Smothers. She went on to do all right. Eric Balfour. Okay, yeah.
I watched that.
Oh, Roger Reese. I love him.
I'm not sure all the episodes were ever shown.
Yeah, that's definitely one of your shows.
It was a really bad year for me. So many things I watched got canceled.
Anyhow, I think that's all we have to say about Whale Song. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. I hope you had fun. In fact, I'm pretty sure you did. I think you had so much fun that you're going to be moved. Your heart will require you to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Perhaps Spotify. Follow your heart. Maybe do both. Just like Krisk7, who left a review titled Love the Sequest.
Me too.
I really enjoy listening to you. Loved Sequest. For years, I thought I was the only crazy one.
We all did.
You don't have to be crazy to love Sequest DSV, but it helps.
Krieg gang! You can also go tell your friends. Pass that word of mouth along.
Because
it's a little awkward.
There's no juicy beef burgers from beyond the veil of time going in the mouth.
No.
So there's space for word to come out of mouth.
Exactly.
Think about it.
So do that. You can also follow us on Blue Sky at Whiskers.
We're having fun there. I love the Whiskers account on Blue Sky. It's good.
It's very good. It's a good time. Lots of stuff shared. Lots of people interacting. If you found us through Blue Sky, hello.
Hi. It's working. It's helping.
Yeah, so you should do those things.
Keep watching the Zork Let's Play on YouTube.
Yeah, you can also go check out my other podcast, Throwback Bound. We are coming up to the end of season one of Spellbinder.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no connection to Joshua Jackson.
Yet.
That I know of.
I'm sure Heather Mitchell has done something.
I'm going to find out Heather Mitchell was in something with whoever. Or that one lady who wrote shit, Mrs. Muggleton.
Okay.
She was the writer.
Okay.
She was the one that went on. She like went on and wrote a bunch of shit.
But back to the Zork Let's Play. Because
I thought you were done.
No. Because that was something we did as a reward to people who helped raise funds for the Bridget Alliance. And because people who are familiar with the series are like, oh, if you like this thing in Zork 1, well, you get a load of Zork 2. I decided that if people donate a cumulative $5,000 to the Bridget Alliance while we are posting the Zork videos, I will play Zork 2 myself.
Oh, you don't do that.
Yeah. The Bridget Alliance, if you're not familiar, is an organization that helps people get abortions. They help people with travel itineraries, childcare, you know, a place to stay and recover or wait out a waiting period, depending on the state. This is what they do, and this is why they are valuable. Every dollar you give goes to absolutely necessary medical procedures and the ancillary costs that prevent people from getting them. So that's why it is a cause that it's worth supporting. That's why it's an organization worth supporting. And when I am saying these words, we're already more than a quarter of the way to that goal. I feel like I'm probably going to have to play Zork 2.
Yeah, probably.
And since this is like a pretty informal spur of the moment thing, I didn't set up a donation link. I'm sorry. I'm just asking for people to like send a screenshot of your donation receipt. I will track the totals myself, and we're going to see how it goes. So I'll be providing links to that in the show notes again.
You should donate.
Yes.
Make him go play a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's it?
I suppose it is.
So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.